Welcome to the Quartering Podcast for Friday, the 5th of August. First up today, instant regret, Addison Rae gets cancelled, blasphemous Holy Trinity bikini.
We often talk about on this channel, you know, I've been very upfront. I was raised Lutheran. I'm not particularly religious or what you would define as practicing. But I'm probably what you might call agnostic. But I do know, I respect my viewers' religions and their choices. And I also know that there is a double standard that exists in modern entertainment and press, and that you can mock Christianity all you want with zero repercussions. But if you mock any other religions, it's a big deal. And apparently some like washed up influencer named Addison Rae had decided to wear a bikini that had father, son on each, you know, top. And then on the bottom piece, it said Holy Ghost. And she received massive backlash. And I thought, wow, that's actually odd. I was surprised, given just how, you know, the mainstream media and everything is totally fine with dunking on Christianity. Now, am I personally offended by the bikini? No. I'm more offended that I'm even covering this topic, but it is an interesting conversation. In the fact that they're selling this, it's not that you're wearing it, but that you're selling it for $100, and it's made by Adidas. So TikTok star Addison Rae deletes blasphemous Holy Trinity bikini photo after backlash. Would she do it with Islam or Buddhism? Well, we know that that is just, of course she wouldn't. TikTok star Addison Rae on Tuesday was hit with backlash for posing in a blasphemous bikini that was Holy Trinity themed. The father on her bob, son on the other bob, and Holy Spirit on the bottom. She reportedly wore the Adidas collaboration swimsuit, praying's Holy Trinity bikini in white, priced at $100. The Instagram post showing off the snap has now been deleted. You know, by the way, this is like just reeks of desperation. I could tell you that there's only one day left on the stimulus package. You may be stimulated right now thinking about that bikini, but promo code STIMMY, STIMMY, saves you 10% on any order on coffeebrandcoffee.com. That is hard ending tomorrow. Like, I'm not extending a 10% off discount. That, you know, that's the deepest we've ever done, and I don't think I'll ever go that deep again. We've got five delicious coffees. We even have a decaf. We have three delicious hot cocos. We have cold brew bags, which are almost impossible to keep stocked. We keep selling them. We have about 17 spots left in our Roaster's Choice program that we opened to 500 customers, and only two people didn't renew it last month. So I was able to add a few more spots. So if you wanted to get into the premium Roaster's Choice, you can use it there. We have six organic teas, whether it's oolong, masala chai, Earl Grey, breakfast tea, chamomile tea. We have it all, and it all goes to supporting the channel. Bikini blunder. Addison Rae blasted for a blasphemous bikini depicting Father, Son, Holy Spirit on her nether regions. Do you consider it to be edgy humor, or is Addison going to be struck down with lightning for this? Rae, whose full name I don't care. Nah, this is disrespectful to Jesus. Sad what you all do for money, one comment reportedly said, with another user adding, so messed up. This is not okay. This is blasphemy, someone wrote. Is nobody going to talk about disrespecting religions, another user added. It's actually interesting, you know, because you wouldn't normally see. I'm actually shocked that there was any backlash at all. Turning Point USA show Poplitics posted the photo too, asking their viewers to comment. People saying, would she do this if it was Islam or Buddhism? Former White House photographer Andrea Hinks commented, any other faith and this would be an issue. Tacky. Wow, tacky. Do people still say tacky? The social media influencer took heat last year, but for a far different reason, that He's All That actress, also for daring to say hello to President Donald Trump at a UFC fight. I mean, I don't support Trump, Rae said. And if someone does, that's their opinion, and I respect everyone's opinion. She doesn't have an opinion. She's a vapid social media influencer. But it's very rare occasion that you get to meet a former president, and I think most people could agree with me on that. Yeah, I mean, I don't really care for you saying hi. But then she ends up getting forced to delete it. Are things turning around? She has deleted the photo of herself wearing the blasphemous outfit and apologized. Now, it's still available, it looks like. Let's see, can I still buy it? Yes, it is still available for $100 from praying.com. I don't think, I mean, it's just in bad taste. That's, you know, that's just what, you know, I don't really think I would say that's cool, or that obviously that wouldn't make me want to like buy it. Now, the photo only captured her top half. Several Instagram users were quick to label the garment as disrespectful and messed up in the comments. Nah, this is disrespectful to Jesus. I wonder what Christians think about Addison Rae's post. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't care because it's just a pathetic like attempt for attention. But I do think it's funny, and I do think it's also interesting that she apologized. Like, that's rare. Are things turning? Now, I don't understand what it is that this person does or adds to society. I think it's pretty it's pretty interesting that we have quote unquote TikTok stars. I'm pretty sure she got famous being a white girl dancing to you know, stealing dance moves from black girls. I think that's what pretty much is well known about her. I do think it's interesting that there's an apology, that she actually made an apology. Maybe that means things are turning. Maybe that means, you know, things are coming around. I don't know. Do you think, I assume that it's gone now. Oh no, it's still for sale. You could see on their article saying, she doesn't have 1 ounce of shame. How the heck would you post something like this? Even if you're not religious yourself, respect other people's beliefs. You know, I guess you know how to work it. Trash it. Trash. I'm outraged. So rip that offer. That's funny. You should be ashamed of yourself. Would you do this regarding Muslims? Is amen on the back? Do it with Muslims and see how strong and independent you are. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think that's a very valid point. You know, be brave. Do something related to Muslims. They wouldn't do this to that community. Whoever came up with this concept, God save you. So disrespectful. The fact that many people are supporting this is disgusting. I would say that, here's somebody saying, need OMG. Most of the people seem to be absolutely trashing it. And I guess that's, I would argue that's a good thing. I don't know who this praying company is. The whole premise of this brand is to like spicify God and religion. Look, I'm not personally offended by it, but I do think it'd be interesting if they decided to try and do something like this with a different religion.
And next up today, Alex Jones just did the impossible in court.
Mixed emotions. The trial, if you can call it that, of Alex yesterday ended, and we have a judgment, but there were some very spicy moments on the stand for Mr. Jones that I want to talk about. And second of all, look, I don't think any one person should be defined forever by one thing they do. I think he has admitted that he was wrong about the things that he said. He has admitted it multiple times. He has admitted it on record. And now there's a $4.1 million judgment against him as a penalty for that. And I don't think that automatically negates all the memes and things of that nature that the man has brought us in the entertainment over the years. And I also think it's a pretty interesting question to ask yourself. What if modern day journalists like the mainstream media were held to the very same standard that they're trying to hold, or that they have held Alex to? Alex faces ruin. Shameless conspiracy theorist is ordered to pay $4.1 million to parents over some of the things that he said on his airwaves that caused people to like allegedly show up at their house and harass the parents. Obviously, that's not okay. I don't think anyone is saying that it is, but it is interesting to ask as a thought experiment a little bit about, you know, what about Taylor Lorenz? What about these journalists that perpetuated, what about the people at CNN that perpetuated all this Russia stuff that we now know is baloney sausage? The dossier that was baloney sausage. What about journalists who dox people? Taylor Lorenz famously doxed the creator of Libs of TikTok, and she had to move. She was getting people showing up at her house. These modern day journalists don't ever seem to get held any kind of real standards. We saw all the stuff with Kyle, where these journalists said all sorts of heinous things about him, doubled down on things that they knew flat out weren't true. And as of right now, anyway, have faced absolutely zero professional rebuking and zero legal rebuking. Now, Kyle keeps saying he's going to sue these people. I don't know what's taking so long. You know, there seems to be at least a few low-hanging fruit targets that he could go after. We also saw Nicholas Sandman settle several lawsuits. Now, there seems to be this like this like general consensus that Nicholas Sandman's super duper rich. Maybe. We'll never know. They were settled out of court. You know, if the kid got enough money to pay for his college education, I'd say that was a win. If it's millions and millions and millions, I don't know. There have been people that have told me that they know his lawyer and that it was a lot of money. Maybe. I doubt it, though. I doubt it was like millions and millions. Maybe. Now, Alex has been ordered to pay $4.1 million to the parents after saying he could pay nothing over $2 million. Of course, this trial happened in Austin, Texas, and the verdict was reached on Thursday. Essentially, just how much money, since this was a civil case, how much money he was supposed to pay them. The parents had sought $150 million in compensation for defamation and intentional infliction of emotional distress for all the damages and harm that his lies have caused him over the span of a decade. Jones' attorneys asked the jury to limit damages to $8, $1 each for the compensation, and Jones himself said any award over $2 million would quote-unquote sink us. Now, there are a lot of interesting questions to be asked about the incident. Now, sometimes, what's its Hanlon's razor or whatever? Or is it, yeah, Hanlon's razor? Where like you can't attribute malice to what can be best described with as like idiocy. But there were several interesting eyebrow raising moments where Alex's own defense team sent the opposition legal team an entire digital copy of his phone. On top of that, now, not only did they use that in court to get Alex in a pretty spicy gotcha moment, they also, people are saying that they will be taking that said phone and using it against him on the Capitol Hill stuff. Now, on Wednesday, an accountant who oversees free speech system financing testified that Alex withdrew, quote, $62 million from the company over the last 14 years, and that $9 million in crypto donations went directly to him. A separate, shorter trial to discuss punitive damages will be discussed following the jury's verdict. The damages are awarded when the court finds the defendant behavior to be especially offensive. During the final day of the trial, the host got into a row with the family's attorney, Joseph F. Don't Care, flipping off him in court. On Tuesday, he once again argued with Bankston and his team, argued that they were feeding the jury, quote, fake videos during the trial, causing one of the attorneys to lash out against him. Oh, shut your mouth, the lawyer told him as he walked away. Jones responded, "That's what you're trying to do. Shut my mouth. You'll never succeed." And there was obviously some moments that were not awesome, you know, for him. And again, he was wrong about that. And it's just interesting to talk about the double standard that this really, really puts on display. And it was obviously just a terrible, terrible incident that he got wrong. I don't think anyone's denying that. But, however, I'll say, it's interesting to look at, you know, some people think, wow, why did your lawyers, you know, completely torpedo you by sending your cell phone to the people who are suing you? That's a fair right. That's a fair question to ask. Now, maybe they're just that dumb. That's fair to say. Maybe there was some other reason that they did it. I don't know. We can't know. We can't know what was really running through his head, but holy moly, that seems like a pretty big dereliction of duty. He talks about, you know, that he rants at his dang lawyers after the event. Now, the weird thing is, if he was really has $50, $60, $70 million, this isn't going to bankrupt him. And I suspect that his viewers will rally to buy even more brain juice or whatever it is that he sells, or camping gear or whatever. He'll be able to come back from this. I don't think that if the numbers are real, I don't know. You know, I don't know what his financials look like after the deplatforming, because, you know, the thing with Alex that has made, you know, that really fuels my affinity for him, other than him being hilarious at times, is, you know, at the end of the day, he's an entertainer, I believe. And he was the canary in the coal mine when we talk about, you know, the social media bannings that eventually led to the wide scale banning of a sitting president. There were many things that he said that were outlandish and wild, but there were also many things that turned out to be true later. People always seem to ignore that. There were many things that he said that were, in fact, backed up by evidence that people seem to forget. And yet they still banned him from everything. And yet he's built essentially a network where he can still distribute his show. This is not something most people could do. This isn't something, you know, yeah, if you had $50 million, you could do something like this. Build your own network, distribute your own show, find a way to do it, to get your show into the hands of people. But I've always been a strong proponent of, you know, the best disinfectant for bad information is sunlight. When you ban people, you just reassure their viewers and their fans that they are correct anyway. So I never think that banning is a great moment. And I do think one of the great moments of the trial for the rest of the world, it ended up getting a lot of things trending again on Twitter. It sparked the conversation again about these people. And it's this. This is a meme I made by Damon Imani. I want to give credit.
One of the things you've been talking about on your show.
So it says, one of the things you've been talking about on your show is that, like, the government is taking part in the terrible things that Jeffrey did and things of that nature.
That government officials are...
Now, we still don't have the black book. We still don't have any clients, you know.
Child trafficking and the grooming of children, right?
Yeah. Well, you mean like what Jeffrey Epstein did with the Clintons?
I mean, that's on record now. That's on record. Everybody saw it. It's in the court documents. Like, only Alex would have the stones to do that. Yeah, he screwed up and he's going to pay the price for it. But that doesn't automatically, like, negate everything else. Yeah, he shouldn't have said that stuff. Nobody's saying that. I still have an affinity for him because he is still an important free speech case study.
And next up, Netflix blasted by woke director, says we were right all along. Woke doesn't sell.
Wow, well, it's almost like focusing entirely on the fact that a show is woke doesn't actually bring in enough viewerships. Well, that's what we're finally seeing now. As a showrunner for a recently canceled Netflix show has come out to speak out against Netflix for relying exclusively on its woke marketing as opposed to actually talking about elements of the show. This on top of massive streaming losses for Paramount and HBO Max cutting 70% of its workforce. It's a streaming bloodbath out there. And well, I can't say that I'm extraordinarily bummed to hear it. Now, this interview is actually pretty interesting. We talked about this show, this girl-on-girl vampire show getting canceled. But what was interesting is the showrunner actually coming out to say, wait a minute here. I think my show is good. That's subjective. That's neither here nor there. But the kind of the watershed moment here is that we have a woke Hollywood person coming out and saying, you screwed me, Netflix, because you only ever said, oh, hey, LGBTQ vampires, LGBTQ vampires, LGBTQ vampires. It's super important. You got to watch it. First Kill showrunner blames Netflix show's cancellation on marketing that never went beyond teen lesbo vampire element. On Tuesday, Netflix put a stake in First Kill after just one season. Today, showrunner Felicia D. Henderson went public with her thoughts on why the show was not given a new cycle. The show is based on a short story by Victoria Schwab and executive producer Emma Roberts. In the series, teen vampire Juliet sets out to make her first kill so she can take her place among a powerful vampire family. She sets her sights on a new girl in town named Calliope. But much to Juliet's surprise, Calliope is a vampire hunter. Whoa! From a family of celebrated slayers. Both find that the other won't be so easy to end. Unfortunately, way too easy to fall for. Wow, what a great young adult story to tell. I so enthusiastically signed on to the show because it had something for everyone.
Did it?
What did it have for me? Henderson said in an interview with the Daily Beast, strong woman leads, supernatural intrigue, an epic Shakespearean battle between warring families. Girl, I've seen 100 vampire movies like this. Twilight was this exact same. Even What We Do in the Shadows has a love triangle between a slayer and a vampire in its most recent season. This is not a unique trope. It's been played out a zillion times. Families and a prominently featured black family in the genre space, something black viewers crave and a general audience needs to be treated to. So the showrunner, all they said is diversity, 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 diversity. Now they're whining that Netflix just said diversity, 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 diversity. But she said, while the marketing materials for the show were compelling, they were reductive. The art of the initial marketing was beautiful. I think I expected it to be the beginning and that the other equally compelling and important elements of the show, monsters versus human, or monsters versus monster hunters, the battle between two powerful matriarchs, etc., would eventually be promoted, and that didn't happen. See a poster for the show below. Released on June 10th, First Kill made streamers' weekly top 10 of English-language TV series in its first 3 days. It ranked 7th with 30.3 million hours viewed. It peaked at number 3 in its first full week of release, 50 million hours viewed, trailing only Stranger Things Season 4 and Peaky Blinders. The series easily cleared 100 million hours viewed in its first 4 weeks. This is actually mind-boggling to me. What is it that Netflix would actually deem as a success if these numbers are real? I mean, you basically had a top 5 show and you canceled it on a network that you create 100 shows at a time. That seems really weird. Henderson maintained, the show is kick butt, and we were in the top 5 globally and domestically for 3 of the first 4 weeks. I was very hopeful for a second season. According to Deadline's reporting, the series did not have the staying power of most Netflix hits and did not meet thresholds for viewing and completion of episodes. So what does this possibly mean? Well, it means that Netflix crammed the show down everyone's throat. If you've ever opened the Netflix, like the Netflix dashboard, you know what I'm talking about. There's like, you know, you'll see a huge banner for a show, and then it's like, this is number one in the world. And then it's like, I've never heard of this. It's just like the trending tab, basically, on Twitter. Fake. YouTube trending. Fake. People watched it and hated it or didn't like it, essentially. Or it had a strong group of core viewers, because when you look at the reviews actually aren't bad. Like, the critic reviews aren't bad, but the viewer are pretty bad, but the viewer reviews are pretty good, which generally leads to like a show being, you know, kept on. Henderson maintained top 5 globally, according to Deadline's reporting. So people just either there was a large group of people that watched it initially and then it just didn't have any word of mouth, or I'm not exactly sure how you get here. When I got the call to tell me that they were renewing the show because the completion rate wasn't high enough, of course I was very disappointed. So a lot of people basically tried the show, didn't like it. What showrunner wouldn't be? I was told a couple weeks ago that we were hoping completion would get higher. I guess it didn't. Henderson did credit Netflix for giving the show a chance in the first place. They licensed an IP, paid for a pilot script, and gave a healthy production budget, she acknowledged. Henderson executive produced the show. This is not, you know, important elements beyond the girl on girl. It's because Netflix thinks people are stupid, and I guess they can be. You see Nerdrotic posting, this is another streaming service. Maybe you shouldn't have made 5 years of garbage Star Trek. Paramount Global predicts $1.8 billion streaming loss in 2022. $1.8 billion loss this year alone. Why? Because get woke, go broke. You had Batgirl, another kind of woke element. I mean, look, just because a movie has a female lead does not mean it's woke. This is like one of the most reductive things that the left says about our critiques often. I didn't see any of the marketing for Batgirl to say that it was woke. Just because you had a female woman of color in the lead role does not mean that it was inherently woke. Does not mean we know for sure she would have been a Mary Sue. Does not mean we'd have sweet lines about white privilege. We even got lines about white privilege in The Batman with Robert Pattinson, which I liked. The lines felt really out of place and dumb, but the movie in and of itself wasn't quote-unquote woke, even though you had Catwoman kicking grown men through windows, but whatever. It's still, you have to suspend some level of reality. You know, you had a $100 million film that was in quotes, irredeemable. Warner Brothers just shelving it. And I think that what's happening is a larger reckoning that essentially Hollywood has said, here, for years you haven't asked for this content in any real large amounts, but we're going to make it. And because if you don't watch it, then you're a bigot. You need more female leads. Why? Because we say so. It turns out that actually maybe we didn't. Maybe nobody wanted Batgirl. Maybe nobody knew how to cast Batgirl. Maybe Batgirl would have been a fine side character, or like not a side character, but like in an ensemble cast. The thing is, DC also screws this kind of stuff up all the time, never gave Batgirl a chance. Like, you should have had Batgirl in in an ensemble cast so people could get to know her before expecting me to pay $15 and commit 2 hours of my time to watch an entire movie carried by somebody that I've got no connection to. Marvel gets this. Marvel brings in side characters, although they didn't with Captain Marvel. But, like, for the most part, you bring in characters, side roles, you start them out on Disney Plus, and then you give them their movie. DC just never really understood that. And what this is it's like a woke reckoning. The audience, there is an audience for something like Batgirl. That's undeniable. There is an audience for, Leb of Vampires. But it's not big enough to justify the massive amount of money that they're sending us to. And what you're really finding, if I wrap this up, what you're really finding is that that's just not enough. That you actually have to have a good show. And if you look at a lot of the replies to these tweets, I'm sorry, but it just wasn't good. I watched a few episodes and I couldn't get through the entire season. Honestly, I heard that there was this kind of show. I would have watched it. I mean, what was there to advertise? It felt like it was very by-the-numbers star-crossed lover story, but happened to be vampires. To be fair, this is a classic trope. It only lasted 2 episodes. Most of the people in here clearly watched it and didn't like it and didn't think it was very memorable. It just wasn't a good show. And the fact that it happened to be woke just wasn't enough to keep it on the payroll.
And next up today, the Rings of Power just made a huge mistake. Peter Jackson reveals he got ghosted and cut out.
Well, if you thought Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, the Ring-a-ling-a-ding-dong was going to go over well, Peter Jackson, the director of the much-beloved original trilogy and the forgettable Hobbit series, has absolutely just pulled the pin and chucked a nade into the fandom. There's absolutely no chance that much of the modern-day fandom, like just like with The Witcher, for example, you have a lot of fans who read the books, okay? There's like that core audience. And then you have, in The Witcher's case, almost as many fans who play the video game and are huge fans of it. Now, the video game was relatively respectful of the lore, and there really was no friction there. So those two groups combined. Here you have basically the same thing with Lord of the Rings. You have Peter Jackson's trilogy, which is much beloved, universally beloved, one of the best trilogies of all time, maybe the best trilogy of all time, and the book readers. Everyone agrees that it was great. Well, now Peter Jackson just absolutely blew everything up. Now, late Friday night, coincidentally timed, you know, the release of the show is coming up soon. Peter Jackson says Amazon asked him to be involved with the mega-budget Lord of the Rings prequel and then cut off contact. Amazon suggests the story isn't quite so simple. Peter Jackson says Amazon's Lord of the Rings ghosted him. Quote, they asked me if I wanted to be involved and said, that's an impossible question to answer without seeing a script, said Peter Jackson. So they said, we'll send them to you. And then they never did. Peter Jackson said he has no hard feelings towards the Lord of the Rings series. I'll be watching it. If somebody makes a good film or a show, it's something to celebrate. One thing that I'm looking forward to is actually seeing it as a perfectly neutral viewer. You're not going to be perfectly neutral. Come on, playa. Quote, in pursuing the rights for our show, we were obligated to keep the series distinct. We have the utmost respect for Peter Jackson and the Lord of the Rings films and are thrilled that he is looking forward to watching the Rings of Power, said Amazon. Zoinks! Zoinks! You see, just like when Disney ghosted Lucas, I don't know why these folks in Hollywood like to ignore creative individuals and hire uncreative people. I mean, you see, ultimately, that's what it is. Now, is the story a little bit more complex than that? Well, let's take a look. This via Bonding into Comics, the Lord of the Rings director Peter Jackson reveals that Amazon asked him for help on Rings of the Power, but then ignored him. They said they sent the scripts and never did. First appearing in the Hollywood Reporter's Awards Chatter podcast, Jackson told the host Scott Feinberg that Amazon, quote, asked me if I wanted to be involved. And I said, that's an impossible question to answer without seeing a script. So they said, as soon as we get the first couple scripts, we'll send them to you, he detailed, and the scripts never showed up. That's the last thing I heard, which is fine. No complaints at all. Well, he also didn't have to mention that, but he did. Later, joining the Hollywood Reporter writer Kim Masters on her business podcast, Jackson reiterated, about 4 or 5 years ago, they asked me if I would be interested in participating. So I said, have you got the scripts yet? Quote, because I know how hard the scripts were to write for the films, and I didn't know the people writing the scripts, the director explained. They said, oh no, we haven't got the scripts yet, but as soon as we do, we'll send them to you. So I was waiting for the scripts to arrive, and they never did. Yet, despite this, quote, ghosting by Amazon, Jackson said he'll still be watching The Rings of Power. Well, just putting that out there poisons the entire well. Because what it really goes to kind of show is that they had a chance to try and like bridge the gap and get the input from someone who's done it correctly, somebody who's done it right, and they just chose not to. They said, nah, we're not going to send those, or it's just not really important to us to have his input, which is obviously absurd. Maybe they thought, well, we'll get to it when we get to it. I'm not exactly sure what they were thinking, but I mean, it's Peter Jackson. Like, I don't really understand why you wouldn't like jump at the chance. Quote, I'm not the sort of guy that wishes ill will, he said. Filmmaking's hard enough. If somebody makes a good film or TV show, it's something to celebrate, which is extraordinarily rare these days. That's my anecdote. The one thing I'm looking forward to seeing is as a perfectly neutral viewer. I think that putting this out there was, you know, he didn't have to say any of it. He didn't have to say that, but he put it out there anyway. So it's difficult to really take him serious that he isn't a little salty about it. And by the way, he's got every right to be. Jackson's recent recollections notably line up with the interview he gave to Metro back in 2018, where he noted that, quote, I don't have any thoughts on it because I haven't seen anything. I wish him all the best. If we can help, we certainly will, he said. It's a big task. In response to Jackson's claims, Amazon Studios spokesperson said, quote, in pursuing the rights for our shows, we were obligated to keep the series distinct and separate from the films. We have the utmost respect for Peter Jackson and the Lord of the Rings films, and are thrilled he's looking forward to it. I'm not exactly sure what that means. According to THR sources, though, this is far from the full story, as in addition to these reasons, Amazon reportedly ceased communication with Peter Jackson under specific direction from the Tolkien estate. As of writing, the specific reason as to why the estate wanted Jackson far away from the Rings of Power remains unknown. Well, could it be that, you know, the Peter Jackson estate has turned into, you know, if you look at any of these quote unquote Tolkien scholars, they're all like exceedingly woke. I don't know that Peter Jackson isn't, by the way, but maybe they were like, no, we want this like reimagining of Lord of the Rings too white. I don't know why the estate would, you know, why this estate would turn away from or specifically say you cannot talk to him. I don't know. Sources close to the project describe a complicated and delicate backstory of the situation. First, that the studio had a high regard for Jackson and that the Rings of Power showrunners had privately attempted to make overtures to the filmmaker. But as statements suggest, there were also legal concerns about keeping the films, which are owned by Warner Brothers, and the TV show separate. There have been executive changes during that time period in question as well as with former head of genre programming, who once was described as an advocate for luring Jackson to the project, departing the company in 2019. Perhaps even more crucially, sources say that author J.R.R. Tolkien's estate was against having Jackson on board. This shouldn't be surprising as the estate had no involvement with his films, and Christopher Tolkien has previously slammed the trilogy in the press as eviscerating his father's books, claiming they had turned his novels into action movies for young people that lack beauty and seriousness. But the estate is involved with the series. Amazon paid the estate an astounding $250 million for the rights to make the show. All of that said, one does not simply offer to send Peter Jackson a script and then leave the man hanging. Moving on, Jackson was asked also as the movie studio would greenlight his trilogy today, answering, probably not. Not with a director like me and a studio that would put its money on the line for three movies. As for his trilogy legacy, Jackson says, if there's anything we gave to the ongoing community of filmmaking, it's that we opened up the CGI bag of tricks to have huge battle scenes. That's a bit of a modest answer, considering the epic fantasy shows like HBO's Game of Thrones would likely have never been greenlit if not for his trilogy's massive box office success and award success. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that. So the Tolkien estate and Amazon essentially leave the man hanging. Absolutely bad look just weeks before the show goes live. If the estate says no, can you really blame Amazon? Probably not. But I think I would have found a way. You know, I would have found a way to make it work if it were me. But it's not me, and I didn't write the books, and I didn't get paid $250 million as a family member for actually having done nothing. But that's neither here nor there. This show is off to a rocky start, probably only slightly worse. I mean, only slightly better than The Last Jedi. Or the, you know, really the Disney series. You know, the whole Disney prequel series. I'm sorry, not prequel series, but the latest ones. Other than Rogue One, most of the Disney movies have not been really kind to the fans or really George Lucas. Now, George Lucas got his money. So, there's that.
And next up, Disney preparing for She-Hulk disaster by attacking men for not liking the show.
It's Friday, at least at the time of recording this, and there seems to be a central theme. A couple of upcoming shows this week have started to kind of fire back at fans or issue some like preemptive strikes in terms of, you know, people are going to complain about this, so we're going to get out in front of it and pretend that we don't care. She-Hulk, apparently, getting a ton of shine, a ton of it. Yesterday, Disney shared, I wanted to show this quick. Disney shared a big image of like kind of the MCU thing. The future is female, just like Batgirl, which is apparently canceled. Disney saying must she series for, of course, She-Hulk. Now, She-Hulk is not a show written for me, and its existence is, of course, totally fine. Not every show has to be for everybody. The problem is the very same people who live by that core tenet, who say that kind of thing, get completely booty blasted when people make fun of their show or when they get low ratings or people don't watch it. They start calling you all sorts of ists and phobes and this and that. You know, She-Hulk is made for, I assume, the CW crowd based on, and particularly female. And that's fine. It's going to suck. It's the viewership's not going to be good and they're going to blame us, but that's neither here nor there. By the way, today's the last day to use promo code STIMMY, STIMMY, over at coffeebrandcoffee.com. 6 organic teas, 6 coffees. We've got our K-Cup pre-orders. We've got a few spots left in Roaster's Choice. The promo code is literally getting turned off today, so make sure you pick something up if you're thinking about it. First of all, She-Hulk director Kat confirms Disney Plus series developed with a focus on, quote, inclusivity and making sure that the story was told through the female lens. Here's the thing. There's a common fallacy in Hollywood that, like, these people think that it's not because, like, look, it's like the same fallacy where they're like, oh, we need more fat, ugly people on TV, men and women. The fact of the matter is women still prefer to look at attractive women. We've known this since the beginning of time or since the Don Draper days of marketing. This is a known fact, but they keep putting ugly people on TV and telling us that's beautiful, and it keeps failing. It's similar with this. The number of people looking for a strong, poorly written, on-the-nose female empowerment story is like 7, right? Now, you have your average consumer who's just going to watch whatever Disney Plus puts out there, and that's fine too, but this show will fail, and it will fail very badly. Now, Disney doesn't cost Disney a ton to keep it on the platform, so it's unlikely that they're going to cancel it, but this show is not meant to be like super serious, I guess, but here's what they say. She-Hulk attorney at law director has confirmed that 2 of the most important aspects to the next MCU's entry development are, quote, inclusivity and making sure the story was told through the female lens. Asked by staff writer Sydney Buxbaum how having, quote, a team of all women behind the camera influenced the series' production, the director insisted there were a lot of car accidents with a lot of cameras running into each other. Oh, wait, she didn't say that. I will be so excited the day when that's not a big deal? Well, why would that be a big deal? I'd be concerned that you don't have maybe the best person for the job and you're only hiring based on whatever chromosomes they have. But whatever. We're not there yet, she opined. But I hope that this show is part of the movement where it's just accepted that some shows are predominantly led by women because that's how life is. Hey, I remember Xena Warrior Princess was one of my all-time favorite shows as a youngin. That was led by the wonderful Lucy Lawless. There's lots of female-led shows. Parks and Rec, pretty much led by Leslie Knope, another female-led character, one of my all-time favorite shows. I pretend that last season didn't exist. Seinfeld, Elaine was a main character, maybe not the main character, but there's a lot of female-dominant shows that have been extremely popular. That's the thing. These people keep gaslighting people and thinking, like, this is the first time ever in history a woman's done anything. Quote, it was definitely something we talked about, inclusivity and making sure that the story was told through a female lens. Comic books have a tradition, traditionality in the art being through the male gaze. And so there's a lot to talk about when it's the female gaze and how do we get it from our point of view. The director then revealed that with these goals in mind, one thing I come back to was the wish fulfillment elements of getting to see her walking down a dark alley and someone gives her a hard time and she's able to kick their butt. It was something that every single woman could relate to, any woman of any age, explained the director. How exciting would it be to walk home in a dark alley and not worry? By the way, most men are concerned about that too. I'm just saying. Like, I don't think that a dark alley is a particularly safe place to be for any gender. Putting forth such nuanced things, the director recalled, we talked about women feeling the need to be polite. It comes up, if a guy comes up to you in the bar, it's obvious what he wants, but you don't want to offend him because you're afraid of being rude. By the way, men do this too. It's not uncommon that, by the way, as a man, this is not even true, from a romantic aspect, it's more common that like the town drunk is like, you know, on one of his benders and you don't want to, you know, push him over the edge and you just want to be left alone. And then maybe, you know, the bartender and the bartender says, hey, he just wants to be left alone. So it doesn't create an issue. And then you later hire that bartender because she's on the same wavelength as you and she becomes your assistant. But anyway, it's being not wanting to be rude is not a uniquely woman thing. Like what that is like, her being a sexist. There are plenty of times that there are people at the, like for example, at the pub where I just want to like watch the brewer game and I don't want to like yakety yak with everyone around me. And then there's somebody yakking in my ear and I'll like get up and move or I'll pretend to like go have a smoke and then sneak in the other side of the bar. Cause I just don't want to be like, hey dude, shut up. You know, I'm just trying to watch the game. So anyway, that's not a uniquely woman thing, but the problem is people think it is. And then we get to the CGI. She-Hulk producers respond, this is yesterday, to CGI criticism saying fans would tear apart the character's appearance anyway. Well, that's a good excuse. She-Hulk producers have responded to backlash aimed at the lead character's appearance. She-Hulk producers have defended their lead character's appearances after fans criticized the CGI in early clips. She-Hulk, which premieres on August 18th, which is just 2 weeks away from now, is the latest in the Marvel Disney Plus series, which follows Mark Ruffalo's cousin, Jennifer Walters, who gains the ability to turn into the Hulk and is smarter and better at it than he is, of course. However, after the first trailer was released in May, fans quickly turned against the series, complaining about the quality of CGI. Some fans were also disappointed by Maslany's appearance as she transforms into She-Hulk because she does not appear to be overly muscular. She-Hulk director Kat responded to criticism by saying, in terms of the CGI being critiqued, I think it has to do with our culture's belief in its ownership of women's bodies. Oh, of course. If you criticize the CGI, you're a sexist. I think a lot of the critique comes from feeling like they're able to tear apart the CGI woman. It's not like everyone rips on Marvel CGI. It's not like it's a constant source of critique in every film, but no, She-Hulk's the first time it's about women. There's a lot of talk about her body type, and we base it on Olympian athletes and not bodybuilders. But I think if we'd gone the other way, we'd be facing the same critique. I think it's very hard to win when you make women's bodies. I don't. It's very easy. I mean, I'd say both of these Hulks, She-Hulks look good. One on the right obviously looks much better. But, like, both look good. You know, I think that, again, you're firing off this salvo of saying, like, you know, I've had coworkers sit next to me and break down crying. The artist said, I've had people have anxiety attacks on the phone. Many fans have questioned whether the CGI in She-Hulk was unfinished due to the strain on the show's video effects team. And by the way, there is some truth to that. From what I understand, Disney and Marvel doing like their CGI, because they're so CGI dependent, is a crummy job. And it's like a sweatshop. I've heard these things. I don't have any like friends that work there, but this has been something that's been reported many times. And it's like, okay, well, why not make it look better? We saw what happened with Sonic, right? The fact that they took the time to go back and make Sonic look better without crunching their video effects people, not only ensured the first movie's success, but probably was the biggest reason that, one of the big reasons that it got a sequel. And probably there'll be another one, I'm sure, almost assuredly. So the idea that, oh no, it's a CGI critique is uniquely a woman thing is just baloney sausage. And the idea that like you have, they're firing out these preemptive strikes about like, you know, oh, we're the wham in this. They were going to complain anyway. And to an extent, people complain, but that's not what they said. So if you had said, yeah, people complain, we do the best we can, we hope that you like the product we have, that's how you answer it if you're not an ideologue. But if you are an ideologue, you say, well, that's just because it's a woman, and that makes it totally different, which is also BS.
And last up today, Amazon busted lying about the Rings of Power as casts start pushing back on fans hating.
The Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, the Ring-a-ling-a-ding-dong gets closer. Things are getting pretty interesting. I would say that some of the damage control that's coming out now has been predictable. We're just waiting now for like the full scale counterswing against fans. What we're seeing a lot of the press or a lot of the interviews circling around was like, they're clearly hearing the criticisms and they're addressing them through like intermediaries. But we're missing yet the next step, which is coming, I assure you, is having the actors, director or showrunner speak out directly against fans who are criticizing the show. And we're getting pretty darn close to it, to be honest with you. Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power actress says, quote, casting isn't tokenization. Amazon's diversity and inclusion quota says otherwise. Now remember, we covered an article the other day where Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power said that an actress said her character was an activist, and that was a big deal to her because the showrunner let her be an activist in real life and be an activist in Lord of the Rings. This is the very definition of a self-insert and exactly what you don't want to see in terms of modern mythology or like, mythological stories and all this stuff. You don't want modern day stuff in there. Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power actress Nazanin Boniadi, who plays the original character Bronwyn in the series, recently declared that the casting for the series isn't about tokenization. She spoke to Entertainment Weekly about the series, telling the outlet it was not stunt casting. She elaborated, this isn't tokenization or a lot of the things that we're used to in past roles. Every person has been cast because they are the best people for the role. I don't believe you. Regardless of ethnicity and race. And I find that super empowering. I mean, imagine. I guess like you just take the work. If you're like, if you happen to be, well, really anything but a non-white male, and you see that like the casting says stuff like, we're looking for a POC or a WOC or a whatever acronym. Like, I don't blame you for taking the job, right? But it's got to feel a little like, oh, okay, like, I didn't really earn this because I didn't necessarily compete against everybody who was in the field. It'd be like in the sports ball in the NFL, having in the Super Bowl and have the other team's starting quarterback get injured the week before this or the day before the game. You know, you're not really getting their best effort. First, the claim does not pass the smell test. As YouTuber Just Some Guy pointed out back in February, Middle Earth is basically northwestern Europe, mostly England. The native people of those areas are, of course, all white. So all the races in Middle Earth would likely be white. We know that's true because Tolkien described what they look like. They're all white. He further added, the actors can be non-white, and if they can pass as European, with or without makeup, they can play these characters. They just need to look the part, whatever that means, apparently. Yeah, so I guess, you know, looking the part makes sense. Casting non-white actors in Middle-earth is like casting an actor in Black Panther movies. It makes no sense. A white actor, I assume they mean. A white actor, yeah. So the idea that people can cast in the roles and the best one for them falls on its face. As Just Some Guy points out, you wouldn't cast a white man to play Black Panther. Not only does it fall on its face, but Amazon Studio published their own inclusion policy and playbook back in June, where they revealed they literally have racial quotas for their productions. Quote, each film or series with a creative team of three or more people in above-the-line roles, directors, writers, producers, should ideally include a minimum of 30% women, 30% members of an underrepresented racial or ethnic group. This aspirational goal will increase by 50%. Isn't that funny that you should have 50% of a minority group? Casting actors whose identity, gender identity, nationality, blah, 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 aligns with the character they will be playing. I'm assuming mean casting actors whose identity aligns with the character they are playing. So they don't hire straight people to play gay characters? I don't know how that works. Aiming to include one character from each of the following categories in speaking roles with a minimum of 50% to be women. LGBTQIA, person with a disability, three minimum 50% of these women. It's like, it's so crazy. It's like, it literally is a formula. And you can like, you can see it. It's so weird to see it actually written out. The third bullet point makes it very clear that Prime Video does indeed have a racial, gender, and orientation quotas. Not only does Amazon Studios detail these policies, but their inclusion documents are guided by Amazon Studios' DEI team, Diversity, Inclusion, Equity, and Inclusion, by the way. Ensure diverse representation, dismantle the longstanding barriers to success in the industry, and inspect our processes so we do not create or perpetuate inequities. And tell inclusive narratives to reach a globally diverse audience. I mean, look, you can have whatever diversity you want. Like, you know, but it's like when you have a character that there is a show where there's established lore, you literally are race swapping. And look, I just wish they would stop pretending that's not what they're doing. Like, where are all the redheads, by the way? Where have all the redheads gone? You know, like, it's like you have all these things. Lord of the Rings stars hope Rings of Power cast don't pay attention to the pressure. I think they should pay attention to the pressure. You're taking on a beloved franchise from a beloved author. And also, by the way, you're also competing against Peter Jackson. So there's innumerable reasons why you should be paying attention, why you should be worried. You see stuff like this on the Steam forums. Rings of Power and toxic Tolkien fandom. I'm so sad seeing the Lord of the Rings Tolkien community now turning Tolkien into a toxic fandom. So many Tolkien fans are now showing their true colors. No. See, that's the thing. It's like the demand we let you into our space, make space untenable, ruin space, move into new space. Like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the Tolkien fandom. It's these new fans, the NU fans, that come in and are like, oh, well, this show would be better, but it would be better if it was more diverse. Why? I don't know. I have a $150,000 college degree that told me that's what it should be. But there's really no science behind it, no data behind it. And we're already seeing a lot of these shows that are like, outwardly progressive fail. Now, again, Batgirl is being used by some media to say that, oh, it's a, you know, we don't know how quote unquote woke it was or wasn't. We just know there's a female lead. Big deal. We know Batgirl is a female. That's not that crazy. But we just saw earlier, I reported on a Netflix director who complained, or a showrunner who complained, that Netflix only advertised the show as basically LGBTQ vampires, and said that's why it failed. So, I mean, you have so many examples. Lord of the Rings, the Hobbit, the Silmarillion is for everyone, not just some people. Middle Earth is also for women, people of color, non-binary, blah, 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 blah. Again, so are hobbits bigoted towards normal-sized people? Do they have the right to be? You know, except the characters look nowhere how they should. I'm not talking about skin color. It's, again, if you were to do the same thing to, like, Black Panther or a traditionally black story and race-swap them, people would lose their mind. Or if you were to take Amelia Earhart and have her played by a man, right? A historically known identity that is a woman, and had her played by a man, people would lose their mind. So they survive on, like, on gaslighting you and browbeating you. Anti-Rings Power fans need a reality check. You are showing absolutely zero appreciation of the, look at this thread that this clown wrote. Zero appreciation of the fact that there are actually something substantial being done with the Legendarium, and that now more than ever people watch Lord of the Rings content isn't just that original trilogy. Huh? Nobody was asking for this show. No fans of Lord of the Rings. I rewatch the trilogy every single year, and I'm thankful for Peter Jackson and for him caring enough to do it the right way. You need to stop watching sensationalist YouTube channels that make their full-time job bashing Rings of Power. They don't care about Tolkien. They only care about you angrily clicking on their videos so you can they can make ad money. Well, I mean, I can make videos about anything. In fact, I make 5 to 7 a day. By the way, click that red subscribe button down below if you enjoy what you see. I just, look, you want to diversify a show? Fine, but don't like pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. I know what you're doing. And the fact of the matter is, historically, when people present this as like an important thing, like at the forefront of what's important to them, the shows always suck and they always fail. Look at Batwoman, right? You know, when you are obsessed with DE&I and you forget that you need a good script and good characters and a good show, which almost always happens, the show sucks and you're not doing these underrepresented groups any favors by putting them in trash that people hate. I hope you enjoyed this video, though, and we'll talk to you again real soon.